From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the legislative and political director for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. And today we are joined by Bruce Moyer, the legal counsel for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Welcome to Naps Chat, Bruce.
Thanks, Bob. Good to be back with you.
We have a lot to talk about this week, the week before Thanksgiving, and I just want to let everyone know that we will not be broadcasting next week in commemoration of the Thanksgiving holiday in order to let all our listeners pay more attention to their families than to Naps Chat, at least just for 1 week. But let's start and talk about what happened this week in the postal world. In this week, we have a new chairman for the House Oversight and Reform Committee, Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney of the 12th District of New York. She beat out a good friend of ours, Jerry Connolly. I should add that both Carolyn Maloney and Jerry Connolly are good friends of the postal supervisors. But at the end of the day, the Democratic caucus selected Carolyn Maloney, who was the senior-most Democrat on the House Oversight and Reform Committee. I might also add that Carolyn Maloney is no stranger to the postal world for one very important reason. Back in 1992, when she was first elected to the House of Representatives, she defeated a seven-term incumbent, Congressman Bill Green. Bill Green's sort of importance to the postal community was that he proposed legislation to basically create an exception within the private express statute, which would permit private conveyors of the mail to actually deliver the mail. That means take mail outside of the postal stream and provide for the private carriage of mail. Carolyn Maloney won that first election by a narrow 2 percentage point margin. She had strong support within the postal community. And Bruce's we experienced at a meeting we had with her last weekend. She does not forget her friends, does she?
No, she doesn't forget her friends, nor how it was that she first entered the House, 26 years ago.
26 years ago.
So a 13-term congresswoman from New York who the late Elijah Cummings had jumped over to secure the chairmanship several years ago with the passing of our dear friend and the chairman, leaving that spot open. It became time for Carolyn Maloney to, as the number two, to rise up to that seat. She brings a lot of political savvy to to that position, and that committee, besides its oversight of postal matters, is going to be in the limelight, both as the impeachment proceedings move ahead in the House, as well as in other investigative proceedings within that committee that Chairman Cummings had initiated. They will continue during next year as an election year. Carolyn Maloney's relationship to the postal world, the coverage of her district in New York on the east side of Manhattan.
The so-called Silk Stocking District, which basically is the district that President Trump formerly lived in. And she would have been his congresswoman had he not picked up and declared his legal residence in Mar-a-Lago, Florida, just recently.
Interesting. Set of events there that could have come about. Secondly, there is within her district a lot of headquarters of businesses, including the publishing industry, including the magazine industry.
Right, I think Time Warner is located in her district.
Right, so she's someone who has been very interested in mailing rates, particularly those for magazines, and as we know, that's been a very politically sensitive area. As to the rates charged for that kind of a product, and whether they are, what do they call it, Bob? Underwater
products,
in which they're not bearing their costs within their postage rate. So, we've worked with Congresswoman Maloney in the past in a very positive way, and will certainly continue to work with her now as chairman.
Interestingly enough, one of former Chairman Cummings' chief postal staff people earlier in his career actually worked on the campaign for Carolyn Maloney. And so that is, you know, the relationship at the staff level, there's a continuity, I think, of that's important to us, particularly as so we don't have to reinvent the wheel as we proceed with postal legislation next year, because we're drawing down to this year. We only have maybe four legislative weeks left for this Congress before we get to the Christmas break.
In this session. Yes.
Correct. What's also interesting, as an aside, in terms of legislation, the legislation that had recently sort of skirted the 290 co-sponsor mark, that's H.R. 2382, legislation that would relieve the Postal Service of the burden to pre-fund its retiree health benefits, as of today, I believe, has 289 co-sponsors. That is now one short of 290, which would constitute a two-thirds majority of the House of Representatives, which would enable its sponsor, Peter DeFazio from Oregon, to have it entered onto the so-called consent calendar to bring it to a vote on the floor of the House of Representatives.
That procedure permits, if a bill is being bottled up within committee and not moving out of committee, it permits when you have hit that two-thirds point enough under the House's rules to be able to bring it directly to the floor to leapfrog the committee. And although postal reform legislation in a broader sense, in a more comprehensive way, is not moving through the committee, in fact, has not even been introduced, this particular measure that would repeal the pre-funding requirement imposed upon the Postal Service by the 2006 PIEA, the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act, would remove that burden of pre-funding. Now, there are those on the other side who say the Postal Service hasn't been paying the pre-funding obligation for years. And while it continues to mount up on those liabilities on its balance sheet, nonetheless, it would not do nothing to actually sustain the financial viability and provide for greater stability for the Postal Service.
Yes, because this might serve as a nice pivot to the Board of Governors meeting that was conducted last week. But every quarter, the Postal Service reports its net loss in contrast to its controllable loss. In its net loss, it includes the pre-funding requirement. So people, critics of the Postal Service, use an inflated loss number, which includes the pre-funding requirement, to sort of berate the Postal Service for financial mismanagement, which could be the furthest from the case. Right now, the Postal Service pays an amortization on its unfunded liability, which is probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $800 million. And that's the amortization payment, because what we do is we figure out what the total liability, unfunded liability, is, and you divide it by the number of years, let's say 40 years out, and that's how you come up with an amortization payment. And that is what is included on the Postal Service's balance sheet right now. So let's talk a little bit about the Board of Governors meeting, Bruce.
Okay.
There are now five members to the Postal Board of Governors. There are still four short of, in terms of a presidentially nominated, Senate-confirmed members. One of the current board members, that's Dave Williams, his term has expired or will shortly expire, but he will be in his holdover year. What that means is that at any point during, although that his term has expired, at any point this year, the President of the United States could nominate a replacement for Dave Williams, and he would have to relinquish that seat upon confirmation of a new governor. But on top of that, you have the other four Board of Governors who are primarily in the financial services sector of the economy. That is, for the most part, they're investment bankers, and that brings a different skill set to the table than we had been accustomed to in the past.
That's right. A skill set that as executives and as investment bankers, their very first task is to identify and vet and then ultimately select a new Postmaster General. Megan Brennan's term under her resignation papers that she provided to the board several months ago indicated, what, the 31st of January?
31st of January would be her last day. I meant to ask her at the Board of Governors meeting whether or not she was going to, on her final day at the Postal Service, going to carry the route that she carried as a letter carrier when she worked out in Pennsylvania. But I didn't get the chance to ask her that question.
Her voice continues on this season's Postal Service commercials, celebrating the season and encouraging folks to use the Postal Service to send their packages. And I don't know whether that's her last commercial, but her voice has certainly been the voice of the Postal Service through her tenure.
And this was her last Board of Governors meeting. And when the next Board of Governors meeting takes place in February, there will likely be a new Postmaster General because they're undergoing a search right now. I think a lot of us are sort of wondering whether or not it's going to be someone from inside the Postal Service or someone from outside the Postal Service who will be hired by the Board of Governors as a new Postmaster General.
I think the betting is that given the background of this board, as well as the fact that the last two PMGs have been within the Postal Service.
Actually, last three.
Potter, and then Donahoe, and then Brennan. It's time to look outside and bring in a fresh new vision for the Postal Service and a new set of skills.
That's right. And one of the things that is interesting that this Board of Governors has sort of an innovative item on the agenda, actually it's outside of their agenda because it occurs after the Board of Governors sort of adjourns their regular meeting, is that they invite members of the public to offer testimony to them. And one of the individuals who offered such testimony advocated for the elimination of the defined benefit pension plan in the Postal Service. Why does that make a difference? As Bruce, as we just discussed, these Board of Governors are from the investment banking financial services sector of the economy. And the movement amongst Fortune 500 or Fortune 50 companies is to move away from defined benefit plans and move to defined contribution plans. But basically that means is eliminate postal pensions. And that's one of the issues that I'm keeping an eye on, and I think that NAP's members ought to keep an eye on, is any attempt by legislatively or within the Board of Governors to eliminate postal pensions. It just came out this week that the Federal Express, FedEx, is eliminating its pension plan for new hires. The UPS eliminated its pension system back in 2016. So it's something that we have to be on high alert about as we move forward.
Particularly to the degree that for postal supervisors and managers, the law requires that their compensation, including pay and benefits, be comparable to similarly situated employees in the private sector.
In the private sector. However, there is still a considerable number of large private sector employers who continue to offer pensions to their employees, particularly those in highly unionized sectors of the economy, of which the Postal Service is. One of the other issues that came out of this Board of Governors meeting clearly was the financial situation of the Postal Service. And what is striking is its controllable loss. And remember what we spoke about a couple of minutes ago about controllable losses. The controllable loss for the Postal Service for FY 2019 is $3.4 billion. That's controllable loss, not net loss. The net loss was considerably higher, but I'm not really going to address that other than say that those include items for which the Postal Service has absolutely no control over, hence uncontrollable costs. But that $3.4 billion net loss in controllable costs compares with a $1.95 billion loss in fiscal year 2018. So its controllable loss increased in the current fiscal year. On top of that, there has been a loss in mail volume over the past year of 3.8 million pieces of mail have left the mail stream On the other hand, there's been around a $500 million increase in postal revenue this year, including a 6.1% increase in parcel revenue. But the parcel revenue is highly competitive. In fact, UPS is rolling out a flat rate box for, I don't know if it's going to be for this Christmas, or for this mailing season, or for next year, but that will be a direct attack on priority mail. Mm-hmm. So there is going to be competition, and the Postal Service needs to address this in some way, shape, or form, and not solely by pricing. It has to become much more innovative and effective in the competitive market for which it plays a role.
That's right.
Let's move on to something that I know that you've been working on very closely with our outside counsel, and that is the lawsuit against the United States Postal Service, something that's very important to our members because we had this independent, neutral fact-finding panel that found favor of the NAPS, and the Postal Service continues to sort of fight that unbiased opinion. So, Bruce, where are we right now with the lawsuit?
We're at a point of initial pleadings with the court that have involved following our filing of the lawsuit in July. The filing by the Postal Service in response denying the charges in the complaint. We'll return to that in just a moment. But denying the charges in the complaint and moving to dismiss the case. Asking the court to dismiss it for lack of jurisdiction over such a matter insofar as NAPS have any right to file a case, no statutory right specifically existing within Title 39 permitting what's called a private right of action to seek review of a pay dispute like this. The pay dispute itself, under the original claims of our lawsuit, contends that the Postal Service ignored the requirements of Title 39 to assure that pay between supervisors and managers was comparable with their private sector counterparts. Secondly, that there was a failure on the Postal Service to provide an adequate supervisory differential that's required under the law. And thirdly, that the Postal Service has denied the right of representation of all EAS employees to NAPS, given its rights of consultation under Title 39. Those were the grounds upon which the lawsuit was filed. The Postal Service, as I said, contended that, no, you don't have a right of action. The statute doesn't provide for that. So just earlier this week, NAPS filed its reply brief to the Postal Service's motion to dismiss and pointed out to the court that, yes, NAPS does have a private right of action for review of the Postal Service's alleged violations of Title 39 concerning compensation and the scope of NAPS representation. And the proof that NAPS does have that private right of action is the fact that a similar lawsuit like this arose almost 40 years ago within the District of Columbia, leading up to the appeals court, the D.C. Circuit Court, that held that NAPS claim at that time that involved the breadth of the supervisory differential and other claims, that all of those were reviewable, and that further changes to the law in 1980 that the Postal Service pointed to did not strip NAPS of its right to action. So that NAPS claims clearly fall within the scope of jurisdiction of the court to hear these claims. And furthermore, the court should certainly entertain the claim as it deals with NAPS' right to represent all EAS employees. Now, I should point out that in the interim, the United Postal and Managers Association, UPMA, the successor to NAPIS, has sought to intervene in the litigation, contending that their rights to represent postmasters are implicated by NAPS' lawsuit. and their motion to intervene is also pending before the court. What will happen next? Postal Service will have an opportunity to reply within the next 2 weeks, unless the time is extended, and it may well because of the Thanksgiving holiday, to reply to the NAPS pleading filed this week. And then it's before Judge Lamberth, the presiding judge in the case, to decide whether to grant or deny Postal Service's motion to dismiss, as well as UPMA's motion to intervene. We would hope that we would get a decision from Judge Lamberth sometime before the end of the year, but sometimes, particularly in civil matters as this, compared to criminal matters, which have to move along under what they call the Speedy Trial Act, there's no such urgency of deadline upon civil matters for the court, so it could possibly extend into early 2020 until we get an initial decision. So that's where we are.
Let me ask you this, Bruce. The Postal Service's motion to dismiss our claim, that was not unexpected. We did expect them to file that.
We clearly expected them to file that. as we gamed this out before the lawsuit was filed, we expected them to file that even before we filed the original complaint.
So at this point in time, there is sort of no timeline. There's no deadline by which the court has to act on this issue. It could, depending on the court's calendar.
That's correct. And I invite all NAPS members and others listening to this podcast to take a look at the pleadings that have been recently filed in this case, and all of them are on the NAPS website under the lawsuit heading.
That's very good. This saga will continue.
It certainly will into 2020.
And particularly now that we're starting the next round, I guess. So this just demonstrates the necessity of sort of resolving some of these consultative issues, because we haven't yet resolved the previous results of the previous
that's a good point, Bob. These legal questions arise with regard to the pay package that the Postal Service provided to EAS employees for 2016 to 2019. That expired for 2019 in September 30. So here we are under a new period of time without a new pay package, not even the consultation for that pay package yet having begun. And under the law, cannot begin until the NALC, as the largest postal employee union, completes its negotiations on its pay package, and those are continuing at this moment.
That's about all the time we have for today. I want to thank Bruce for joining me this morning.
Good to be with you, Bob.
And I want to, on behalf of Bruce and myself and the entire NAPS family, we wish you and yours a happy Thanksgiving. As I said, we will not be podcasting next week. Enjoy the turkey or whatever your menu calls for.
Enjoy your turkey and football.
I'm going to bend right down and write myself a letter and make